Hey everybody, it's David Newman from Do It Marketing, and I have a very special guest on with us today, Michael Dalton Johnson, the author of this fabulous book called Rules of the Hunt. Michael is also the founder and CEO, publisher, and editor of SalesDog.com, which is really one of the premier portals for salespeople, sales management, and sales success on the web. But we're really here to talk about some of the ideas in Michael's latest book, Rules of the Hunt. And Michael, welcome to the call.
Well, thank you, and I'm so glad to be here with you.
So let me ask you just a big picture question, because as you know, and I've posted a separate video book review, I love the book. Everyone that even has their head screwed on halfway straight is going to love the book. They should pick up the book at rulesofthehunt.com, where you're giving away about $700 worth of bonuses. But you know what? I wouldn't worry about the bonuses. I would just pick up this great book because it's a fantastic book. The bonuses truly are a bonus. So I'm just saying that because it's true. So big picture question. At SalesDog.com, you have not only your own expertise, but really the world's leading thinkers on sales. My question for you, Michael, is how do you see the state of sales today?
Well, you won't be surprised to hear that the game is changing on the surface. As I point out in the book, it's comparing horse racing to car racing. It's still the same concept. You still need the basics are still in play. The equipment has changed. And essentially that's what's happening with sales. The equipment is changing. The means of contacting people, relating with them. I hate the term networking, but that's becoming a huge factor in starting sales conversations, for lack of a better term. There is, the cell technology, which is driving me crazy. I read some time ago, and I had to laugh, and then it dawned on me recently, there was a Nostradamus type of, or Damas rather, type of prophet who said, a man will stand on the shore of England and speak to a man on the shore of France via a magic stone. And that's essentially happening in the sales world. The magic stone, of course, being the crystal in the telephone.
Absolutely. Well, and we have all kinds of smart crystals in our smart telephones. So let me talk about what you just said, because I think that is spot on, that the game is the same and the equipment is changing. As I was going through Rules of the Hunt, and Rules of the Hunt, by the way, for the folks that don't yet know, is not just a sales book. I mean, it's certainly about sales success and business success, but there are ideas in there about hiring and firing and management and leadership and growth. And certainly sales, and certainly marketing, and time management, and self-management, and all sorts of things. What I found refreshing is that the book is really evergreen. So your own career, Michael, spans back 30-some years. And obviously there are some very current, up-to-the-minute references in what you talk about, but the strategies and the tactics and the ideas are really timeless. So when you talk about networking, I think you mentioned that you don't like the word networking, but the word relationships comes up many, many times in Rules of the Hunt. So, you know, building relationships with your team, with your prospects, with your customers, with your direct reports if you're a business owner or a CEO, with your sales team if you're a sales manager, relationships are really central to Rules of the Hunt.
Exactly, and I think as a leader, you need to understand the true nature of relationships and why people are doing what you are asking of them. And one of the rules, I don't know, as you say, it's a, you can pick this book up and read on any page and get a nugget of information that will be useful to you. But the greatest rule I feel in here on leadership that I've written is simply don't tell people what to do. Tell them who they are. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're at the DMV and you approach the clerk with a frustrated look on your face looking at a form, and you say, I can't figure out how to fill this out. And the clerk says, looks at you disdainfully, looks around you, says, the instructions are on the back, sir, rather disdainfully, and then looks around you and says, next. In any event, the same scenario, you're approaching the clerk, this time with a smile, and you have the same problem. And you say to the clerk, you look like the person who can help me with this. And you have a smile. You've already told her who she is. She wants to prove you right. It's a whole different dynamic. In the first scene, it's about you. The second scenario, it's about them. The same with calling an employee into your office and saying, Janet, I need to have this report done. I need to have it by Friday. And the person sighs and reluctantly takes it and leaves your office. The other scenario is they come in, they sit down, and you say, Jan, you came to mind as the perfect person to help get this through and get it out by next Friday. And they, again, beam a little bit inside and want to prove you right. And essentially you've told them who they are. And it's far more powerful. It works at the dinner table. It works in, with any relationship. And in my mind, it's the key to effective leadership and building strong relationships.
Absolutely. And that certainly was one section of the book that really jumped out at me. By focusing the attention on them and how fabulous they are, obviously you're building them up, you're enhancing your relationship, and of course at the end of the day, you get what you want because you made someone feel good about themselves and their contributions and what, you know, what their capabilities are.
Precisely. And they again, I think the dynamic of it is they want to prove you right.
Yeah. Now let me ask you this, because again, focusing attention, and this isn't Jedi mind tricks. This is really about the foundational ways that relationships are built. Let's go back to the sales environment for a moment. I think there is so much noise out there, and salespeople, marketing people, small business owners, entrepreneurs, they are fighting to get buyers' attention. What do you think are some successful approaches to getting buyers' attention that build the relationship instead of diminish or annoy people in the relationship?
Well, that's an excellent question. It's one that, of course, everyone ponders upon. Probably the best way to get their attention is a personal approach and by whatever means you can use. And I think email, GASP, is the best way to start a sales conversation if it's done right. And it has to be personalized. It has to, your personality has to be in it. There's a lot of tricks to sending out an email which will resonate with the recipient, actually get opened, and statistically responded to. Where you're asking them to do something. People, surprisingly, I get, because it's my business, I study every email that I receive in my inbox. And so it's a lot of study. Unless I get to the point where I know the sender and I just automatically delete. But if somebody's pitching me on a new office equipment or a new service, bookkeeping service or whatever, I'll go in and analyze what they've said and how they've said it. And it's amazing how many, David, you just can't believe the amateurism that I see in much of what comes into my inbox. I don't know how they get any responses, and I can understand when you mention the possibility of building sales through email, why many business owners and business sales managers will sigh and say, we tried that, it doesn't really work. Well, it's not because it won't work, it's because you don't know how to make it work.
Right, right. Well, and also I'm channeling our listener, probably some small business owner, entrepreneur, independent professional. They're saying, Michael, what are the templates? What are the scripts? What are the tools? And I have good news. Number one, you have to buy the book because the book gives you sort of the why to and the what to. And then you have to go to salesdog.com because what Michael has done as a publisher and an editor and a thought leader himself, he has collected some of the greatest sales gurus and sales thinkers and sales trainers and sales experts. Let me just brag on salesdog.com, if I may, Michael.
Oh, I wish you would.
So one of your contributors, because I'm a subscriber, I love getting my sales dog in my email every week. There was an email probably a few weeks ago now, and one of your contributors, the top line of the story, the lead story in this particular e-newsletter from salesdog.com was Chris Lytle and the magic email. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do.
The magic email. And I'm going to even tell people what the magic email is because salesdog.com is filled with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tips like this one. He says, okay, you've lost touch with a prospect. The prospect has gone dark. You've called, you've emailed, you've sent proposals, you've sent brochures. You're about to send out, you know, rescue party. You send the following two lines in an email. Dear Michael, I still have you on my radar as someone I haven't heard from. Am I still on your radar? ? Now, since I read that on salesdog.com, I have used that magic email with about a dozen prospects that are in that category in my world. It's not 80% effective. It's not 90% effective. It is 100% effective. I've heard back from people that I haven't heard from in April. And so right now we happen to be talking. This is an evergreen interview, obviously. But just to give you a sense of time frame, we're at the end of August. I haven't heard from this person in April. Send the magic email that I grabbed from the fabulous editorial content at salesdog.com. 12 for 12, Michael, I have to tell you, 12 for 12. So subscribe to this thing, folks. Subscribe to salesdog.com. In addition to buying the fabulous Rules of the Hunt book that we're going to get back to talking about here in a moment, rulesofthehunt.com and salesdog.com for all the resources, all the newsletters, and all the great sales ideas that will put money in your pocket. So, end of infomercial, but heartfelt and just amazing, amazing stuff. Michael, talk a little bit, because I love that you have a whole chapter on mistakes and don'ts and avoid. And the preface to that chapter is, you know, I'm going to sound like a little bit of a downer. I'm going to sound a little negative here, but these are proven traps and pitfalls. What are some of your favorite mistakes or traps or pitfalls, either from that chapter or just from off the top of your head, that business owners and entrepreneurs make?
Well, off the top of my head is, especially small business people starting out, is getting friends and family involved, either as employees, quasi-employees, or investors. It's, in my mind, a big no-no, a huge no-no. How do you fire a guy who was best man at your wedding is the question I ask small people. What happens if, what kind of a family disaster, how do you explain that the next Thanksgiving, why your business went, next Thanksgiving dinner, why your business went belly up, and how you weren't able to keep your promises. So what I essentially tell them, if it does not have enough commercial merit to raise money or to get your own personal confidence up to the point where you're going in, or if it can't be what I would call the staircase approach to the business, where you take one step at a time and build on each success one after the other. If it doesn't lend itself to that and you need a huge expenditure of capital just to launch it, forget about it. Forget about it.
Forget about it, absolutely, like we say here in the Northeast. Let me ask you this as well. So that's one mistake, obviously. I think some other mistakes that you point out in the book are over-reliance on some of this new technology and under-reliance or underuse of some tried-and-true, proven sales techniques, things that we've gotten away from. I'm thinking now in terms of have a target 10 company list. Make a list right now of the 10 companies, the 10 organizations that you want to do business with, and then map out a strategic approach on how to network your way in, build relationships, ask questions, sniff around, get into those 10 accounts. Again, it sounds simple when you read it in the book, and 90% of the readers, including me, by the way, I'm looking at this going, well, you know, I haven't done that. And that's such a basic building block. So my next question in this category of mistakes, where are people moving away from the old school, you know, the basic blocking and tackling, and where are people over-relying on some of the newfangled things that may or may not work?
Well, the biggest reliance on things that won't work, in my view, is the small, what I will call the internet footprint for companies, which means there's no bricks and mortar, which is fine for some companies. But on other companies, you really do need some sort of way to sort your messages and for people to be able to contact you. One of the things I see, which I don't think will work, is the want more information, send us an email, tell us what you want. Don't start a business relationship with me by giving me a work assignment. I don't want any more assignments. You make yourself available. And I think people rely on that. They rely on voicemail to sell. And I'm saying, no, there's such a thing as a cell phone. And that should be on your website, even if you do have the internet footprint where everyone's working at home or in the field. And when they ring, they don't get, hi, your call is very important to us. Well, if it's so damned important, why aren't you answering the phone? So in any event, it should ring right to you. And I say that people are hiding. They're using the technology to hide from their customers. And I cite an example in there where I placed a $7,800 order with one company because I couldn't reach the company that I really wanted to do business with in the beginning. And they're saying, you know, you're on their website, and they're saying on their recording, go to our website. Well, I'm already here, baby. I'm looking at your phone number.
Right, right. That's where I got your phone number.
Exactly.
Well, let me also ask you where, because I'm sure some of these things have been embraced warmly by salespeople, business owners, entrepreneurs. Some of these, because you're a little prickly, you know, I love your material, but you're a little bit of a prickly guy. Where do you think you've hit some hot buttons, some news that people are resistant to hearing? Where you get some pushback from sales managers, salespeople, entrepreneurs, places where they say, Michael, tell me it ain't so.
Well, you're right. But looking at me in one sense, I am prickly, to use your term. I don't like I'm a guy who dropped out of high school at age 15 and went on to run a multinational business. So you don't do that without being prickly, incidentally.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it has to do with personal style where I get pushback. And I'll tell clients, don't call. Your follow-up call should not be some lame, I'm calling to check in with you to see where you're at. I tell them to be bolder and to say, where are we at on this deal? Are you ready to sign? When can I expect the contract back? Really? Yeah. If they're not ready to hear that, they're not ready to cut a deal with you. You don't have anything at all going with them. And so I advise a degree of boldness, if you will, that many managers and companies don't want to do. It's not in there. They're not constituted in that way, their personalities.
Sure. Well, not to mention from a sales management standpoint, that would blow up your funnel. You say, oh, boss, I got a hot one. They're ready. They're going to buy. If you go in with a, hey, it's time to fish or cut bait message, and they say, oh, no, we're not going to buy this until next year. We might never buy this. In fact, we went to your competitor. We're going to buy from them. All of a sudden, your pipeline that looks so rich and full suddenly gets empty because you're not having those, you know, decision conversations.
Precisely. And that's one of the areas where I get pushback. Also on startups, and God bless people that are starting businesses, but how naive of many of them to think that even though they have this wonderful idea and this with huge benefits, they don't understand the absolute essence of success on a startup, which is marketing, which is getting the word out into the world. And I put in my book, I have a rule, build it and they won't come after Field of Dreams. And it's true. If you don't have the message out there, the platform to reach the people, the right, if you need to talk to the right people who have the means to purchase and the desire to purchase, you ain't got nothing.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about marketing since you brought up marketing. Marketing, obviously, a topic near and dear to my heart. Your chapter, you have a whole chapter on marketing, plus there's all kinds of marketing little secrets and gems throughout the book. But chapter 5 on marketing, you've titled it, Marketing Isn't Rocket Science, It's Harder. Talk about that and talk about some of your favorite sound bites from the marketing chapter that would help people get a better grip on sort of what marketing is versus sales or why marketing is so tough.
Well, marketing is tough because you mentioned it earlier. You touched on an element is that everybody and their dog, in my case, literally, are trying to get your attention. And by every means possible, down to putting signs on cows that are grazing in the fields. Geico has, I live near the beach, and they've got planes flying over with banners all day. So if there's a means of getting people's attention, obviously, advertisers are taking it. Marketers are going that way. Direct mail, of course, television, radio, all of the traditional means are completely saturated. So here you are. And you've got this wonderful product, and you need to introduce it. And how do you go about doing that? Well, in my view, the best way of doing it is by not attempting to do it. And as crazy as that sounds, I know of people who withdraw and make it difficult. And I know this is kind of contradicting what I said about making it easy for your clients to contact you. Let me give you an example. There's a caterer in Beverly Hills who is book solid, and he charges about 50% more than other caterers in Beverly Hills. So you can imagine what the tab is to serve 50 people. And he has an unlisted telephone number. If you don't know him, if you're not recommended, guess what? He's not going to work for you. And that kind of mentality, I know another guy who does consulting, and I was shocked at the rules he lays down for his customers, because you, if you come to him with a rush, the price is doubled. if you do this, if you do that, and he doesn't care. He's disdainful of his customers, and it's kind of not too, it's not hidden. He doesn't try to hide it, and he has people lined up to, it's kind of like the soup Nazi in the old Seinfeld episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of his headset, and it seems to work, and it takes a great deal of, a talent, for lack of a better word, to pull something like that off. Obviously, if you're a chiropractor in a small town, you probably should talk about the benefits of your service rather than to advertise how or let it be known how difficult it is to get in to see you. But in any event, there are a lot of little things like that. The internet is the new word of mouth, incidentally, for marketers, and there's some incredible things out there that that will work. If you get something to go viral, it's insane. I got AOL did a story one time on us, and we got 60,000 visitors to our website within 24 hours.
Hmm.
This was years ago. I was on WABC radio talking about a magazine I had, and I got 1,200 subscriptions in the 20-minute interview. So that wasn't really viral, but this Pinterest, I had an article, or a question with a cute little picture that we pinned on Pinterest, and it was, "Are you smarter than your dog?" was the question. And we had a little bulldog with glasses on reading a book. And 2,000 visitors to the site. Boom.
Absolutely. Well, and you put your finger on, you know, just those couple of stories together, looking at TV, radio, and Pinterest. It's the classic hybrid of old school with new technology. As you say, Michael, same game, different equipment. But even, you know, these days, what you're talking about with the internet, whether it is social media and sort of fun things that you can post on Pinterest or YouTube, whether it's traditional media or whether it's a hybrid, you know, I think the magic is in the mix, and everybody wants the formula. Every business owner, entrepreneur says, okay, just give me the formula. Give me the template. And I don't think there is a template. I think you need to figure out what's going to work for your business, for your buyers, what they're going to resonate with. When people ask you, they say, Michael, you know, you're a master copywriter, expert publisher, sales guru, multiple book author. You know, what's the secret? You know, can I be like you? Can I do it like you did it? You know, what are some of the secret formulas, the magic beans? What do you say to them?
Well, I say, you know, I have to be honest, and I got where I'm at now as far as the presence in the sales market through bribery, and the form of the bribery isn't money or buying off politicians or that sort of thing. It's going to people who are already established within the market. As an example, one of my partners, Zig Ziglar, who's no longer active, but we deal with his organization, and you say, hey, guys, here's what we got, and here's what you've got. We're going to promote what you have if you'll promote what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the disparity in the number of your opt-in subscribers, you may have to give them 2 email blasts versus 1 for you. From them, but you know, you get Selling Power magazine and Jeff Gittimer and a number of people put together like that, and we have over 100. And you pull the trigger all at once on launching a book, and you go to number one in 4 business categories immediately. So that's one of the things that and. I gave a very hard, sharp-edged example, but build partnerships. important people, useful people, as the Chinese say. Surround yourself with useful people. What can they do for you? How can they promote your business? And it's amazing how many people are out there who would be very interested in some sort of cross-branding deal. You know what I'm saying? Mutual.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think you even put it in the book. I think there's so many, hundreds and hundreds of great ideas in this book, by the way. But you put that in Rules of the Hunt. I think you called it, "You Scratch My Back, I'll Scratch Yours,"
yes.
About these win-win type of relationships and how businesses online, offline, in-person, virtual, can totally help each other with their mutually beneficial goals and serving the same target market, cross-promoting each other. Absolutely, absolutely. So all the secrets, here's the other thing that I just want to, as we're wrapping up our time here today, and I want to remind people, even before we do that, salesdog.com is where you want to go to see Michael's empire that he's built with all of these sales experts that he's mentioned and all the fabulous content that they're contributing and that he's publishing. And then for the book, for the $700 of bonuses, downloads, ebooks, cheat sheets, all kinds of fabulous things. And by the way, there's no fluff in those bonuses. Each one of those bonuses, you could pick three out of those 30-some bonuses, and you could have just given those away, any three, and it would be well worth it. But there's $700 of bonuses at rulesofthehunt.com. What I wanted to say about that is all of the resources are in this book. And so, people might think, oh, well, how good could one book be? The way, Michael, that you've structured the book, because you are truly a master copywriter, we don't have time to go into how fabulous you are, but your direct marketing background, your publishing background, your editorial background, your publishing entrepreneurship background clearly shows through. Some of these points are so succinct, so razor sharp, that people will read it, turn the page, and go, yeah, whatever. But I'm saying don't turn the page and go, yeah, whatever. Reread that little succinct soundbite. Highlight it, dog-ear it, underline it, take notes in the margin, because there's probably 10 books, and I'm being conservative here, there's probably 10 books of wisdom in this one book. Maybe it's closer to 20. I'll give you an example. I'm going to give you a specific example because I've got all sorts of dog-eared pages here. You say, if the business doesn't need you, it's even more valuable. And you have, maybe that section is two or three paragraphs. Number one, that is completely true. Number two, you have encapsulated all of the key ideas and the central thesis of a book like Michael Gerber's E-Myth. And I know that Michael's on your staff and he contributes as well. But you've really encapsulated and crystallized and summarized some of these key business concepts that you believe in. It might just be one page in your book of your thinking, but there have been entire books written about whether it's marketing, sales, negotiating, leadership, hiring, firing, personal productivity, time management. This is like 20 books in one. And so I'm just saying that as a huge fan and as someone who is a big, big believer in this format, this kind of quick bite, punchy format. But so many books that are quick bite, short little modular chapters, they're short little bits of fluff. And these are short little nuggets of gold. So I don't want people to look at the format of the book, flip through it at a bookstore, flip through it on Amazon, and look inside the book and go, oh, it's just one of these short little soundbite kind of books. It is actually 180 degrees opposite. It is just enough, just in time, really succinct, really well-crafted, well-thought-out advice from a guy who's been there, done that, and that shows through on every page. So enough gushing from me. Michael, feel free, tell people how to get in touch with you, how to tap into the empire, beyond obviously the websites we've been mentioning, salesdog.com, rulesofthehunt.com to buy the book. How else can people take part in your empire?
Well, if anyone would like to contact me via email, it's simply michael@salesdog.com. And if you go to salesdog.com, you'll see all of the contact information, all of our partners, how to contact them. We're quite transparent. In any event, do email me if anyone has a question or a comment. Do take a look at the book. Not only can you get it at rulesofthehunt.com, if you're not interested in getting the free bonuses, and you mentioned earlier that there was no fluff, that it was all meat, I've had professional marketers look at that page and say, you're giving away too much. And I don't know if people can handle all of that as far as what do they want. Do they want it all? Do they want to handle it all? So if anyone would like to go to Amazon and pick up the book and also listen to your video review, which is up there, and we've already got it in this week's email. We're sending people there.
Oh, tremendous.
So in any event, you can find us at Amazon by simply searching for Rules of the Hunt. And you can read parts of the book, as always, on Amazon, that sort of thing, before you buy. So whatever your poison.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Michael Dalton Johnson, thank you so much. Fantastic book. All the best to you and your ongoing adventures. You know I'm going to stay tuned to my salesdog.com subscription because I'm using little tidbits every week like we talked about with the magic email. I will certainly keep tabs on you and your adventures. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a great deal of fun.